Hey, gang, welcome to another episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the spooky secret government of free speech. Well, it's not really, but that's what we're going to talk about today, or not. And we're going to talk about, who else would you want to talk about that with other than former Louisiana Representative Dr. David Duke. Dr. Duke, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be with you, my friend. Super. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And how are you doing?
Very good.
We have been talking the past couple of days on and off air about the World Economic Forum, and other people are talking about it, and it's in the news. I guess there's going to be another big shindig coming up, so people will be talking about it. You know, Henry Kissinger's making this suggestion, and is Klaus Schwab even going to show up? There's people talking about things. What? You've been looking into this, and it's actually got a history. You know, Klaus Schwab and this economic forum have a history that people probably aren't that aware of. And, you know, a lot of people are looking at it as if it's the secret government. I think we were talking about this, or at least I was talking about it, a couple of weeks ago. There was some so-called French billionaire who doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, even in French, who was saying that, yes, the you know, World Economic Forum issues orders to the Biden government, the Macron government. He has a database of 31 people who rule the world. So that sounds really pretty incriminating. What is the origin of the World Economic Forum? And Klaus Schwab, its frontman, what is his history? Is he a Nazi that's running the world?
It's so laughable to think he's a Nazi running the world. Yeah, I really looked into the whole founding of the World Economic Forum and the roots of it. And it has nothing in it. Like all these other groups, whether you talk about communism, or whether you talk about globalism, whether you talk about international, with the modern capitalist banking system or the Federal Reserve, or whether you talk about, you know, Goldman Sachs or Jacob Schiff and his role behind the Russian Revolution. Basically, this was this was a way to propagandize and to try to influence up and coming people in politics and in academia around the world to endorse these policies and these programs of these Jewish globalists. That's really what it's about, whatever their agenda might be. And I think a lot of their agenda actually came from the Frankfurter School, the Adorno School, who was actually a Jewish guy. And like the Freudian psychology and the destruction of the family and the promotion of immorality and every sort of homosexuality, destruction of all of these fundamental bulwarks of Western civilization as a way to corrupt, divide and conquer the countries. But the truth is the roots of it are pretty doggone clear. And we can talk about the development of Klaus Schwab into this organization. But it's first important to know that Klaus Schwab, he got involved in this thing because he was a German, mm-hmm. and he lived in Germany. His father was an engineer. They had a production company. They made equipment and scientific.
Himself, I just want to clarify, I think he was born in 1939. So he was in his 80s, but he seems relatively active. But he'd be in his 80s. And he was a little kid during the war.
He's 11 years older than I. He was a kid in the war, and his dad was a German, typical German, like George Patton used to say, that in Germany, that the members of the Nazi Party or people that were involved with, you know, with doing business with the government of Germany, for instance, because they have basically a free enterprise system, so they had big corporations, but they very much controlled it. They made sure that they didn't run the show like we have in this country. We have a kind of we really do have a shadow government in a way by these corporations like Google and Facebook and the rest of these, and really the media, which is so controlled. Now, they're not technically controlled by the government, but the government influences them. In fact, we found out recently how the FBI and the CIA was actually influencing media and trying to influence media like Twitter in the presidential election. In fact, probably a few presidential elections. And but it was basically the way the thing started. It's pretty simple. The ultimate guy behind it, believe it or not, was none other than Henry Kissinger.
Okay, so
Henry Kissinger.
When was the WEF, World Economic Forum? That's what it is, right? When was it founded?
It got going in the 70s.
Okay.
Its precursor was a think tank, basically, by Henry Kissinger called the International Seminar. And the International Seminar was a seminar at one of the leading universities of the world. And coming out of the Second World War, Harvard and America, of course, came out as the world leader. And, of course, Harvard was the most famous, probably other than perhaps Cambridge and so forth in Great Britain. But Harvard was the most important and major university of the world, of the world's only superpower. So it had a lot of influence. It was also certainly heading up, had the world's strongest economy. It was, in fact, a huge economy, the super economy of the world. In those years, just a few years around that time, in fact, in the 60s and 70s, we had the whole Bretton Woods. We had the creation of the dollar as the as the kind of the go-to currency of the world, which was a big benefit to America and American capitalist corporations. And there were a lot of Jewish corporations in there as well as, you know, Gentile corporations. But it's very interesting. And, so the International Seminar.
Because you're talking about Henry Kissinger. He's still alive. He's going to turn 100 years old this year. It means he was born 1923. And so, you know, when he became Nixon's national security advisor, he would have been, back in 1969, he would have been 45 years old. So he would have been already in his middle age during the time.
Secretary of State, you know, even. So he was.
Became Secretary of State a few years later, yep.
That's exactly right. And Henry Kissinger, by the way, to show you how this is kind of intertwined. Now, Henry Kissinger, and we got to go back, everything kind of goes back. If you want to talk about the Second World War, you can even go back to the First World War in terms of Jewish influence and presidential elections and presidential politics and the White House. I mean, we can look at the appointment of Brandeis to the Supreme Court by Woodrow Wilson. We can look at the American involvement in the First World War, which was done by Wilson, but he ran on the campaign just like Franklin Roosevelt did. He'll keep us out of the war. Of course, everything Franklin Roosevelt did under these Jews all around, Blumenthal and so many others, And these other Wall Street bankers, they were working day and night to try to get us into the war. Roosevelt was trying to hatch away. In fact, he was giving orders to American Navy ships, like cruisers, to fire on German ships, like big battleships, to fire over their bow, trying to get them to fire back to get us as an excuse into the war. The Germans wouldn't bite, though. So this goes back a long, long time. So.
I just want to get back to Henry Kissinger. So it was a key person in founding the World Economic Forum in the mid-1970s, at a time when he was a super big shot. But there was a precursor organization that what did you call it?
Well, it was called the International. It was Kissinger's International Seminar. It's called the International Seminar. There are articles about it. Many of them on Harvard. I read about three or four of them.
Okay, and Kissinger was a Harvard professor before he went to the White House. He was a Harvard professor. He's a big shot. And so as a Harvard professor that he organized this international seminar?
Now, yes, but also understand, and this is so vital to understand, and now this is a Jew, a very big Zionist, well-connected Jew in every way, and he actually was in what they call it, the SAS during the war, and which was the precursor to the CIA. And this, you know, we used to, back in World War One, we had Army intelligence that did most of the spying overseas or the overseas work like that. And then later it evolved into the SAS, I think it was called, and then later to the CIA. And he was in that from the very beginning. In fact, Churchill, as a much younger man, was one of the people who was helping to run involved in the Nuremberg trials, which were the trials that the purpose of them was to prevent any rise of any sort of National Socialist movement. Because if you read the media all over the world, there were just predictions that, yes, Hitler was gone and Germany was gone, but there's a lot of people who really like it. And they saw the success they had economically in the country and the ideals of the country, and they were really afraid that there was going to be a rise of National Socialism again. So one of the things they wanted to do, as well as create a foundation for the State of Israel, they wanted to create a propaganda, a war propaganda, so to speak, that was not only against National Socialism, but is also one that could help Jews as victims and therefore give a justification for the crimes, ultimately, that Israel, they didn't put it that way, of course, but a justification for the Jews going into Palestine and committing terrorism, murder against first the British government and then against the Palestinian people. So it was very, very important to create the Germans as not only, you know, anti-Semitic and bad people, but it was very important to create a vision or a perspective of the war as it was entirely Germans' fault. That's why we had a war, because the Germans started the Second World War, when the truth is it was a small, you know, basically a border war between Poland and Germany in the beginning. And by the way, the Soviet Union came in from the east as well. They didn't declare war on the Soviet Union, though, which already killed 20, 30 million people, by the way, including in Ukraine in the 1930s, including in Russia against Christians, which were run by the Jews. And there was no accusations of mass murder or whatever in Germany at the time. But we got involved in a war, and that was led, and it was really led, as Charles Lindbergh said very well, it was spearheaded by Jews both in media and in the money power of the country. The richest elements of international banking were in the United States. Kind of Loeb Company was one of them. The Lehman Brothers were one of them. Goldman Sachs existed then. They had huge amounts of money, and they were promoting this narrative of the Germans trying to conquer the world and the greatest threat to humanity.
I want to get back to
I think I am there. They wanted to create this narrative, right, of the evil Germans, so they could, they needed war propaganda, so to speak, to create a new war in the Middle East with the Jewish takeover of the Middle East and the terrorism against the Arabs. Since they didn't have any war propaganda they could use of the Palestinians doing terrible things to Jews, it was the Jews going into another people's country, they created the narrative of the Second World War and the war crimes of Germany against Jews, which therefore made people turn a blind eye to what they were doing. So Kissinger was involved in that. Now, here's where we go. So after the war, or even probably later in the war, I would say more in the 40s, it became very apparent. At one point, you know, Russia was on the favored nation status. It became very apparent to Jews, many Jews, that Stalin basically won out in the battle to control Russia over Jewish competitors in that battle. Ever since the stroke of Lenin and the death of Lenin, most people thought, and the Jews expected all over the world, that this mantle would go from Lenin, who was, by the way, considered himself Jewish and had a Jewish pedigree, and
That widely known that he was Jewish, so he was kind of like
that's correct.
Kind of, in a way, a perfect frontman in that he had a Jewish self-identity and yet didn't have a Jewish public persona. How about that?
Yeah, I was standing right next to none other than the great Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Russian archives, and where Solzhenitsyn and one of his aides, I think his name was Kaminin, they showed me, and they helped translate the documents for me, and they showed me the documents of the Lenin family, the wife, the children, and the sworn statements by all of them, and a whole bunch of statements saying that Vladimir Lenin always identified himself as a Jew and their family as a Jewish family. And that was literally in sworn documents, because the government wanted to document all this at some point. This was early on, you know. And this is about the time of his death, and after he had the stroke. But this is really interesting stuff, right? Now, Lenin, during this time when he was head of he was the face and image of Soviet communism, even Churchill in his paper, Zionism versus Communism, the Struggle for the Soul of Jewish People, said that the entire inner circle of the Russian government, almost the entire inner circle of the top people, the really top people, were about four or five of them, really, and they were all Jews except for one notable exception of Lenin. But Lenin actually, during this time, considered himself Jews, and the Jews considered himself a fellow Jew, apparently, because we also had documents that Solzhenitsyn showed me from other of these Jews, you know, talking of historical stuff and books they'd written and notes they'd had and diaries they had and so forth, talking about they considered Lenin a fellow Jew, a full Jew. But Lenin would give speeches in major speeches to the Russian people, literally pretending to be a Russian, in effect, with almost like a Russian-sounding surname. And he was saying that the Jews were the superior people of the world. And thank God for the Jews, because without the Jews, we would never have this great Soviet revolution and the dictatorship of the proletariat and these wonderful advances we're having in our society. This is an interesting story. So anyway, so here's Kissinger. And what happened was when they saw that Russians were beginning to replace Jews in the highest echelons of the party, they also understood in the late 40s about the doctor's plot. Now, there was a plot to kill Stalin, and this has all been bragged about now by the relatives of even the Jews that were involved in it and the people around Stalin, including Kaganovich, by the way, which and one of his nephews, his grandchildren, is even writing about this, that they decided to kill Stalin because Stalin was an anti-Semite and he was going to do programs against the Jew. They also set up under Stalin Azerbaijan, which was supposed to be a Jewish homeland and where he was going to basically send all the Jews of Russia to it. So when they learned about this and they learned that communism was going through a transformation and with the removal of Jews, it doesn't take much sense or much intelligence even to understand that without the Jews driving this force of communism, this Khan, that the Russians would probably revert back to Russian values, the Russian people, Russian heritage, because that's how they won the war, was by pushing the great Russian people, Mother Russia. And so when they started doing things like legalizing the Orthodox Church, starting to rebuild the Church of the Savior and other churches that the Soviets and these Jews like Kaganovich destroyed, when they started doing this, they really started worrying about Russia, and that was really the beginnings of the Cold War. Now, one of the first actions of Kissinger to allay this was, at this point, a lot of the Jews originally after the war, Blumenthal and a lot of these other Jews, Morgenthau, wanted to reduce. It was almost like the famous story, Germany Must Perish, where they wanted to destroy it and make it. They shift out the industry to other countries, you know, their docks, you know, their machinery and everything. They hoped to make Germany a more pastoral country without the economic power. But when they saw this, they said, no, it makes more sense for us to make Germany strong again, but make sure that we control Germany because we sure don't want National Socialism coming back. So they created what was called the German Marshall Fund. That was the origins of the World Economic Forum, by the way.
Okay, so there was the Marshall Plan. Mm-hmm. The Marshall Plan was a
Marshall Plan was the original idea for it. Yes.
The Marshall Plan is $13 billion of aid, which is like, like $200 billion in today's money or whatever. Right. But it aid to European countries, right. And then this German Marshall Fund, not plan, but fund.
That's correct.
Set up later. Like on the 20th.
And thanks for making sure we got all the details right.
This is what I'm trying to get.
I'm familiar with this. Go ahead.
There's this German Marshall Fund. It was set up later, yeah. But in the spirit of the original Marshall Plan, and Kissinger.
It grew out of the Kissinger's International Seminar, and then it was actually set up this so-called German Marshall Fund. It was created and set up by a CIA-linked Kissinger protege named I can't ever pronounce his name.
Guido
Goldman.
Guido Goldman. What was his father's name? His father was a real
big... His father's name was probably, I would say, other than Freud.
You've got the magic touch. Ooh. It makes... glow so much. It casts
the first Oath Keepers trial over January 6 is over. what happened. I'm Peter Serafin with this week's Liberty Minute, brought to you by Dr. Zelenko's Z-Stack. Use code LIGHTHOUSE at ZStackLife.com to supercharge your immune system this cold and flu season. I have been following the plight of disabled American veteran Kenneth Harrelson for several months now. Harrelson was arrested in March of 2021 for his part on January 6th. The VA cut off his benefits 3 months ago at the urging of the Biden Justice Department, a month before Harrelson even went to trial. After spending 630 days in a DC jail under COVID lockdowns the entire time, the verdict is in. Harrelson was convicted on 3 of the 6 charges against him, but acquitted of the seditious conspiracy charge that the Justice Department cited to the VA as the reason for cutting his benefits. Angel Harrelson has not had her husband's income for 3 months. She has not seen her husband face to face since he was arrested over 630 days ago. Harrelson was denied bail and visitation. And now, the District of Columbia has filed a civil suit against Harrelson and others. Please help Angel Harrelson by donating at givesendgo.com/G22ZH. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Barron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Complicit news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go in and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead, and when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
And I'll see you in my dreams.
Oh, I can't ever pronounce his name.
Guido
Goldman.
Guido Goldman. What was his father's name? His father was a real
big... His father's name was probably, I would say, other than Freud maybe at the time, or Einstein, he was the most famous Jew in the world. He was the leading Zionist on the planet Earth.
It's not a household name for me.
Noam Goldman, though.
Noam Goldman.
He was the guy that really was responsible. They give him credit. You can look this up on Wikipedia. Look him up in Jewish histories, Jewish literature, history of Israel and everything. They give him credit as the chief architect of the creation of the Zionist state in the 20th century. Now,
Noam Goldman was born in, 1895.
Yeah.
And so...
This whole thing up, and he was the guy that was really behind it.
He would have been in his early 50s, so he was a real big shot. What was he, a successor to Theodore Herzl? Is that
well? He was also working with the World Jewish Congress and a lot of other World Zionist organization, and he was the driving face, I guess, behind the creation of the Israeli state. That went also. He was very important to the creation of the United Nations. This is something I learned about when I was 13 or 14 years old. It was one of the first things that woke me up about the Jew, the Jewish issues. I read a book called The Ultimate, what was it called? The Ultimate Racism or something like that. It was written by one of our chief intelligence agencies. And it was talking about the fact how the United Nations was almost all formed by Jews, often with very close communist connections. And many of these Jews did. And, It's very interesting. The United Nations was part of that, and they wanted to use the United Nations as a launching point for it, and also control, of course, the foreign policy of America, get them behind it, and the post-war countries of Europe as well, supporting this Jewish state in Israel. And they also tried to negotiate with the British, but they ended up having to drive the British out with terrorism. Anyway, so Nahum Goldman's son, and Nahum Goldman, by the way, is pronounced it's Nahumgoldmann. Those who want to look it up.
Okay.
Now, as it's said, and you can look it up.
So his son is Guido Goldman. What is Guido Goldman's relationship to Henry Kissinger, to Klaus Schwab, and to this German Marshall Fund and the WEF?
Well, he was definitely working with the CIA, if not a CIA agent, but he was Kissinger's protege, his chief protege.
At Harvard? At Harvard? Or in
he was he was at Harvard. He was also in the government, right? He was influencing the American government. So, in fact, the interesting thing is that what happened was, we've got to go into the German Marshall Fund because that's a precursor to the WEF, right? So here he is, the son of Nahum Goldman. He's the Zionist kid. Obviously, his father was the biggest Zionist leader in the world. Now, he took, great pains to distance himself publicly a little bit from his father's legacy because he didn't want to be seen just as an agent of Israel, because he wanted to also influence events in Mideast and Eastern Europe. But we can read his diaries and we can read the books. He was very dedicated to Zionism, very dedicated to his father. But he didn't want to have influence, so again, he kind of took that as a low scheme, right? So he's the guy that created the German Marshall Fund, as well as many other powerful organizations. Now, Goldman helped found and continue to wield considerable power and influence, right, on the global stage. All right, so in the article that I read by an interesting guy named John Vedmore, he talks a lot about this, and he talks about the fact that the high-ranking members of the Council on Foreign Relations were involved in the Goldman German Marshall Fund, which was also very heavily loaded with Jews. They funded political propaganda for broadcast and various forms of mainstream media. Again, you had media working, the Jews in media, as always. In fact, after the war, by the 1950s, you had three major television networks all controlled by Jews. All right, high-ranking member of the CFI previously established a Harvard-based program for training potential international young global leaders through Kissinger's International Seminar. You see the roots of it now. I hope I'm tracing this well for you, okay? So they developed this improved iteration of the scheme, and it was crafted to meet very similar ends, right? Just as Kissinger Seminar had been the brainchild of CFIR bigwig, this guy named Elliot, the new and improved program was the work of another top man at the CFR, Guido. I can't say his name. I'm sorry, I got a block.
Father
Guido Goldman.
Guido. Okay.
Guido. I have the same problem with another pronunciation of a name like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm a lexic. I don't know.
I'm pronouncing it the Italian way. Maybe there's a different Hebrew or Yiddish way to pronounce it.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, so not only was Goldman a Harvard graduate, a high-ranking CFR member, and the head of the most well-connected intellectual think tanks in the United States, and the GMF, he also had well-concealed but inconvertible links to the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. And by the way, over the last few decades, it's come out that the Central Intelligence Agency was actually behind, and Jews in it, by the way, like this guy, they were behind the creation of this German fund, right? So we're talking about Guido Goldman and the German Marshall Fund. And his father, again, was Nahum Goldman. And this guy was a really complex Jew. I mean, he spent the early part of his days in the Russian Empire. And then his father was an Oslo artist.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer: 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer: 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com, or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
His father, again, was Norm Goldman. And this guy was a really complex Jew. I mean, he spent the early part of his days in the Russian Empire. And then his father was also an ardent Zionist. And he took his son to the events of, like, the Zionist Congress sometime somewhere around 1910, 1911. And then he went to Palestine, which is early in those days, at 18. And
so, talking about Norm Goldman.
This is the father of the guy that really is the guy that really is responsible for this Marshall Fund. And so ultimately, that's what grew up.
Father Guido Goldman.
Yeah,
so
Guido.
Norm Goldman went to Palestine at age 18 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So very dedicated Jew. So his family, they had a big tradition of this, right? So, and anyway, so there's a lot of biographies about Goldman. I read a biography years ago. I don't remember that much of it. But Guido, I guess you pronounce it Guido, or?
I think so. Let's go with Guido.
It's as close as we can get to it. Guido Goldman. So his father literally had succeeded in helping to create the state of Israel. And now Guido was tasked with continuing the support of this state and the continuing development of greater Israel. And greater Israel is what Jews talk about as Israel. When they speak about Israel today, they speak about Israel in a global sense, that Jews everywhere are part of Israel. The diaspora now is considered part of Israel. It's really kind of amazing. That's not saying all Jews do that, but the elite are doing that. And I quoted an article the other day from the Jewish Times of Israel, which is one of the biggest websites, Israel Pro-Zionist, and he talks about Israel as being all the Jews in the world, which, again, shows you the connectedness and their. And, of course, there's thousands of organizations that work for their interest on a global basis. The World Jewish Congress is a perfect example of that, powerful, by Lauder. And by the way, he was one of the members of the mega group, which was the Wexner group with these rich Jews, like, oh, my God, the Bronfmans were in that. Spielberg was in that. And these are radical Jews, and these are the people that believe it or not, Jeffrey Epstein was the secretary for.
Okay.
And it was Wexner that provided Epstein with the James Bond mansion, right, for the blackmail spy ring. Anyway, all these people are tied in, right?
And, you know, just to put him chronologically in there, he's born 1937, so he's a year or two older, and he died just recently, like a couple of years ago. And he's a year or two older than Klaus Schwab. He would be, you know, 14 years younger than Kissinger. So he's Kissinger's protege. Okay.
Exactly. So he grew up in the Goldman, house, you know, which is in America, right? New York. And also in London. He's got a place in London as well, right? And, so he met, even as a kid, all these leading people. He met German Chancellor Konrad Adenauer, right? He met, and again, they wanted to make sure that Germany did not go toward National Socialism, but they wanted Germany to be strong against the Russian state that was beginning to rise. And I think a lot of Jews predicted it carefully that communism was going to actually fall. And I think that's exactly what caused that. I mean, once the Jewish element behind communism resided, or you might say just was displaced by the Russians, it was inevitable that the Russians were going to be more like their forefathers. And today Russia is far more resembling I heard another major person talk about that the other day, in fact, in dealing with the Ukraine war, that Russia is far closer. Oh, it was McGregor. McGregor said this, that Russia is far closer to the Russia of Tsarist Russia and Christian Russia than it was under the communist days, which is a pretty powerful comment, I think, right? So getting back to it, and so Noam Goldman, he helped not only create Israel, but was part of the reparations process between Germany and the Jewish people, and he was just working for that greater Israel. He was working for this idea. He knew that Israel had much less chance of survival unless Jews around the world are united and controlling a lot of the foreign policy. Because Israel could only be founded by, if they wanted to do as they did. Now, they weren't going to create a multi or a plural, you know, racial diverse state. They wanted a Jewish state. They wanted a Jewish state and the preservation of the Jewish people. And that the Palestinians didn't make it in that. They had to drive them out. And so they knew there was going to be a lot of pushback to this. So they knew there's a couple of things they knew. They knew they had to have a lot of media influence. They knew they had to have a lot of power in academia. They knew they had to put forth their ideology as well, right? And in this book, there was a famous book by Tom Segev called The Seventh Million, The Israelis and the Holocaust. And it all shows about these negotiations that Noam Goldman was involved with during this period. Okay, I can actually quote from that if you want, but we don't need to do that. We're going to run out of time. But I would like to mention Noam Goldman's, you know, book that he wrote called The Jewish Paradox. I read this when I was a teenager. I was really impressed, right? And The Jewish Paradox, Goldman speaks of the Jewish statesman he had become close to throughout his life.
We got to connect these people to the world economic.
Well, we're doing that right now because we're taking the leaders of Europe. This is the elite, the Gentile elite, and also the Jewish elite which is a gateway to the Gentile elite, right? And so he talked about Leon Blum, you know, of France, Henry Kissinger, you know, in the United States.
He was the prime minister of France for a short period of time in the 1930s.
That's right. Pierre Mendès in France, Bruno Kreisky, you know, a lot of these people. And but anyway, this is what Guido Goldman did. Now, he attended Harvard, and he became under the tutelage of the future Secretary of State, Dr. Kissinger. And he was described in the New York Times, described, and you can look it up. You can do a Google search. I was looking at all these things last few days. And as a Kissinger protege. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this is the guy that was really the protege that got Schwab into all this, right? Now, Goldman graduated from Harvard in 59, something like that, degree in government, a doctorate in the same field, right? And then years later, his development was also in history of, you know, in history in Harvard, but he was involved in the project of Kissinger's International Seminar. So there you go. Now, this is where they began training American aligned, you know, potentially, you know, young global leaders. So guess who else they trained? The 15th Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Trudeau.
Pierre?
Yeah, Trudeau. The World Economic Forum's lifetime leader, Klaus Schwab.
Oh, so I just want to clarify. So you're not talking about Justin Trudeau, you're talking about Pierre Trudeau, his father.
Pierre Trudeau's father, yeah.
Yeah, Pierre Trudeau, who was prime minister from like 1968 to about, exactly, what, 1981, right, or something.
So isn't this wild, right? And Pierre Trudeau, I mean, and his son has also been to the Davos thing. He's a big Davos, the Davos guy and a WEF guy, right? Mm-hmm. And he also, along with Schwab, was also France's Giscard. What was his name?
Giscard,
yeah. Yeah. That's right. And so now the Guido's association with the Kissinger family began.
Just to put this in context,
please.
Giscard d'Estaing was president of France from, I think, 74 to 81.
Yeah, you got a great knowledge there. I couldn't name those dates, but I remember them.
Yeah.
Because I was following that kind of stuff then, but I don't remember the dates. But anyway, so this with Kissinger, Guido's association with Kissinger went way before Guido even attended Harvard. In fact, in his own biography, he says that Kissinger's father was actually, he knew his mother. I mean, they all knew the Goldmans, because again, Goldman was probably the most important Jew in many ways during the 20th century in terms of Israel, the founding of Israel. I mean, this is how close all of this is to the World Economic Forum. It's quite shocking when you start linking all this together and how close it is together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of other groups that were involved too. I could name some of them. So the people involved, there was a guy named Hoffman, another one of these Jews. It's just shocking when you get into it, right? So Harvard also did something called the Harvard Marshall Memorial Convocation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this also was established to give Israel all these millions and millions of marks as reparations because of the Jewish Holocaust. Another reason why the Holocaust was part to advance is because they were going to get a lot of money from Germany at it, and they needed it. And but as I said earlier in the broadcast, you know, that you have to understand, the whenever you have a war, you need war propaganda. And the reason why that the Holocaust became this war propaganda during the latter part of the Second World War, the reason why it was extended and it got increasingly more over time, is because it was needed in this war with the Arabs and the war with the Palestinians and to take over Israel and the criminal acts against them, and also the war to get the rest of the countries of the world and America and all these other countries to support it. And the Holocaust was essential for that fact. Can you see that? I'm sure you can, but it becomes pretty obvious. So the Holocaust, that's why the Holocaust is preached to us every day. And yet we don't have any sort of remembrances whatsoever, no museums for the many more people who were killed by the Jewish communists in Russia. So anyway, so now we can get more into this now. So it was announced.
We have a limited time.
All right. Well, I'm trying. There's so many details. We almost need two shows or three shows. Okay. So it's just so much to deal with here. But anyway, Guido Goldman began to form the GMF's board of trustees in 71. And this is, you know, about the time. It was actually a little bit after that. I think that Schwab first went to it. And then after that, there's a whole bunch of other aspects to it. I mean, it's very interesting. There was actually a fight between Dershowitz and one of these other, these Jews fight over their privilege, right? And Dershowitz.
So the Sherman Marshall Fund was founded in 72, but they were working on it before that. It morphed from Kissinger's organization.
That's what I just said,
When did it morph into the WEF?
It started pretty soon after that. Let me see if I can get the first dates of it. I've got some notes here and give you the exact year. I want to tell you a couple of the other significant members of the newly formed GMF. It was the Deputy National Security Advisor under Kennedy, Carl Kaysen, another Zionist, big Zionist Jew. Carl Kaysen. You know him. And he was, and by the way, he's another one of these Jews that told us that, you know, we should best definitely think about nuclear weapons that we have to against the Soviets. Yeah, he didn't rule that out. And it really is kind of amazing when you get into it, right? So let's see if we can get up to the WEF more specific. Okay, so the next person that was really important in the creation of the WEF was Hermann Kahn. Now, Hermann Kahn is another Zionist Jew. And he was head of the Hudson Institute, right? Or he was part of the Hudson Institute. He was another
think tank out of Stanford University.
Exactly. Right. And he was actually simultaneously advising the State Department, right? And so he was also dealing with trying to educate people around the world to get on board this, you know, the Zionist globalist agenda, and that's exactly what they were meant to do. Now, one of the board of trustees of this honorary committee of the GMF was on the board of trustees was Max Frankel. Now, Max Frankel was a Washington bureau chief of the New York Times, so that's another Jew involved in it, right? A big Jew, and was media. But again, that's where the media and government and, you know, it's like the mafia had a media wing, you know, and they had a infiltration of the police departments and the federal prosecutors. I mean, these Jews just covered all the bases, and they worked very, very hard to put all that in, right? And anyway, so he was on the board of trustees of this. Okay, now we're getting closer to it, okay? Mm-hmm. So another aspect. All right. And so Goldman helped Kissinger move to Washington, D.C. This is how close Goldman to now to the future Secretary of State, right? And he was, again, one of the guys involved with, guess what, the WEF, and involved with all the processes in the GMF after birth, right? It became a young global leadership machine. That's exactly what it was meant to do, right? So they had a Marshall Memorial Fellowship. Again, this is all Guido Goldman and German Marshall Fund. And then they had the Marshall Memorial Fellowship, MMF. That was Jews. The Transatlantic Bridge Builders, which were Jews. Just kind of all sorts of different organizations, right? Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, some of the alumni of these groups, believe it or not, you're going to know this name. One of the alumni was Stacey Abrams, who served in the Georgia House of Representatives.
And I do want to get into the Young Leaders Program, but not in just 2 minutes.
Well, we're not even to the modern GMF. There's just so much to cover here, right?
Okay.
And the modern GMF was like the basic forerunner to the WEF.
Okay, so this is, we got to wrap up. This will have to be part one. But what I'm getting out of this so far is the WEF is basically, it's a relatively recent, like it's in the past half century or so that it was set up. And obviously you had big Jewish power before. And in fact, it was...
They ask me how I knew my true love was true. Cannot be denied.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Love that fills me with dreams untold. Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. Together at last at twilight time. Together at last at twilight time.
Is basically, it's a relatively recent, like it's in the past half century or so that it was set up. And obviously you had big Jewish power before. And in fact, it was very important Jews who set it up. It's not the only thing they've set up. You mentioned a substantial Jewish role in setting up, for instance, the UN. So it seems to me that the WEF is one among a number of instruments of Jewish power, and that Jews use the WEF to disseminate their priorities and their policy. And it's not as if the WEF is running the world. It's the Jewish power is effectively running a big hunk of the world, and the WEF.
Guess who else was best friends of life for life with Guido Goldman? You're not going to believe this, right? Merkel.
Right. What's the relationship between Merkel and Guido Goldman?
They were best friends for life. They had a very close association, correspondence. They got involved in. They came to their mutual meetings. They're all involved in this. Mm-hmm. They're all involved in this. I mean, again, they wanted to definitely control Germany because that is the root of Europe, right? And they wanted Germany as a kind of key post. And they were worried about Germany because the Germans. And by the way, the WEF didn't really emerge into the big time in the publicity thing until the end of the millennium. You know, about the beginning.
Right. Well, I mean, before that,
the beginning of this century. You know,
we were hearing a lot in the 70s and 80s. You heard a lot about the Trilateral Commission, and
exactly.
I'm pretty sure Kissinger.
We didn't really hear about this until about 2008, what would it be, 1998, 2000,
yeah.
and then we started getting about 10, and they had a period in which they weren't doing that good, right? And and there was some pushback on them, they just kind of rebranded themselves each time.
Okay, one instrument among many. They got all these think tanks, they got all these foundations. This is one, and it's one that in the past several years is very high profile.
Another one that we've talked about many times, and you've talked about, Sharon, I'm sure, in your life, the CFR. CFR was another one of these organizations extremely affected by the CIA and Jewish intelligence, and the CFR was one of those places as well.
Well, we're out of time, but we got a lot more to cover on this, so we're going to have to do a follow-up to this in the very near future.
And we'll do it. We can tape it now, or we can tape it later. I've got some of the data in front of me.
Well, thank you for joining me, Dr. Duke.
Yeah. Next time we can go into the Kissinger continuum, you know, we can go into the history of the WEF's Young Global Leaders Program. And that's one of the things you wanted to talk about. You know? So we can do that eventually.
Okay, thank you. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Dang it, dang, dang, ding it, dong.
Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.